I'm Dr. Breister, recognized for crafting dreams at La Jolla Cosmetic Surgery Center. With years of dedicated specialty in the art of facelifts, I've mastered the art of achieving a natural look. Each procedure is meticulously tailored, every detail refined. Trust in experience, trust in results. Choose a specialist who truly comprehends your unique journey.
Contact La Jolla Cosmetic Surgery Center to arrange your complimentary consultation with Dr. Breister at 858-452-1981 or go to LaJollaCosmetic.com/BREISTER.
Urgent announcement, America. It's time to rise up and reclaim our values. Welcome to Biblical Citizenship Alive, brought to you by Save America Now PAC. This is your platform for truth and action. Join Steve and our guests as we confront the critical issues facing our nation today. We stand together for a pro-American, pro-family future rooted in our foundational truths. From defending our liberties to preserving our cultural heritage, we're here to ignite insightful discussions and passionate advocacy. Don't miss a moment of this crucial dialogue as we work to reclaim our cultural integrity and shape a brighter tomorrow. Tune in and be a part of the movement. It's your journey to informed citizenship and action. And now, let's dive in and make a difference together. Here's your host, Steve Austin.
Hello, America. Welcome to a new world view, if you will. We have morning in America, as Ronald Reagan would say. This broadcast is coming right after the results of the election. Kelly and I are going to talk today about some of the local races here in California and statewide, and then also nationally. But one of the things that we really want to start off with is the encouragement for Christians as it relates to the fact that, you know, this was a resounding victory for America and for Christianity, in my opinion, that, the win of the popular vote, the electoral votes, really turned back the kind of what I characterized as both stupid and evil positions of the Democratic Party. I mean, so many of the economic considerations were just absolutely stupid. You know, I'm a CPA and I understand basic economics. But when you have people who grow up in government and never run a business, never have to sign a paycheck, they don't understand the basics. They've been living off tax dollars all their life. And then the evil, the fact that we could have ended up, Kelly, with a president who would have no qualms and a vice president who has no qualms with taking the life of a baby a day before they're born. At a recent, I was at our church Sunday after the election, and we were having a business meeting afterwards, and one of the, we've had a lot of new babies in the church, so a lot of buggies and strollers and crying, which is great news. It's one way to grow the church is to have a strong pro-life movement in the church. But I was looking at some of these little babies, and we were all there at one time. And you've got to change diapers, and they're burping and all that good stuff. But they're growing into, you know, these are special gifts from God. And for anybody that would take the life of a child like that, to, in my mind, from conception forward, is just a really evil person.
Absolutely.
So, you know, that got turned back, though we will talk a little bit about some of the there were 10 states that dealt with the issue of abortion. We'll talk about that at some time. But today, I just really want to praise God and talk about how thankful we are. Now, we're going to start out with some election results in California. And the very first one we're going to start out with, Kelly, you're really familiar with.
I am. I am very familiar with this one. In fact, I was the campaign manager for this one as well. But Lee Hansen, he did win his elementary school board here in Fallbrook, and we couldn't be more excited just to team up with the board already. If we have one more seat that we're still waiting on in Fallbrook, and if Maria wins that seat, then we will have the majority in the elementary school board, 3-2. So we are waiting on one race. She is winning by one vote right now.
Oh, wow.
So we are really hanging on the edge of our seats on that one. So, but we're very hopeful. This was a great win for our elementary school district because now we have three people who really care about the kids, care about them being born in general, and then once they're born, getting them educated and making sure they're safe in their school and that it's all about, you know, bringing the parents in. We want to get parental action. So if we can get more parents involved, you're going to see a better school district. So well, that's going to be kind of his platform.
Yeah, I mean, I really want to thank you and Leif, your husband, for putting in the time and effort. And that's just to get on the board. There's still a lot of school board meetings. Yeah. But it's going to be folks like you, Americans like you, who not only take an interest but do something to impact the lives of young people at the school board level. We have the same issue with city councils. We have the same issue with government in general as a representative. So, but it's hard work. It's not easy. It takes money. It takes a lot of time. You, both of you have your hands full with full-time jobs and kids and all the requirements. But, you know, I really applaud that. Now, as we work through our PAC supported, just to recap a little bit about the Save America PAC that sponsors this program. We started the PAC shortly after Joe Biden got sworn in. I reached out to some other conservative men and said, you know, we got to do something about this. And we got some advice on how to get these PACs started, and we got it formulated, and we were able to get our name secured with the Federal Election Commission, and we were on our way. We started out with 13 people at a lunch at the Loma Santa Fe Country Club in their upstairs boardroom. And that has blossomed into probably 15 lunches in the University Club in the Westin Hotel in Carlsbad with Trey Gowdy. And then a lot of Loma Santa Fe and their management have been very embracing for these lunches. So we don't charge for the lunches. They're kind of invitation only. But people had great times of fellowship, though. The food was so good, Kelly, sometimes wonder if people just came for the food, but we always had a packed agenda with a lot of great content. We had speakers from Iowa and North Carolina and Arizona and not just California-centric speakers, but we supported a lot of candidates. My wife and I distributed at those meetings over 5,000 books that were Christian conservative authors, and they all went away they all went for free. We didn't charge for the lunch, for the books. So somebody, and God was able to bring a lot of, brought donors from all over the United States to the PAC to help us out. And people I don't know, but they helped, you know, really pay for that, coupled with the fact Newt Gingrich was our honorary chairman. And then we also did a lot of e-blasts, and of course these podcasts are now distributed to that database. So the Save America PAC was able to, I think, cobble together and encourage people from all kinds of disciplines. And probably one of the best things is we gave a platform to candidates to stand up and speak for 5 or 10 minutes. Kelly was in charge of making sure they didn't go overtime, you know, you could hear their hearts. And I can say as of today, I'm not certain, you know, California is still counting ballots, which is insane. You know, Florida closes their ballots and they're counted in 45 minutes after the polls close. We're now 2 weeks later and still trying to figure out, I think we got 80% of the votes. We're still trying to count ballots, but in any event, you know, Jeff Gonzalez, who was running for assembly, flipped a seat in the Riverside, Palm Springs area. There's a young lady by the name of Letitia who has also flipped, I think, District 58. We were able to see Lori Davies also keep her seat, though took a lot of heat about abortion. Our congressional candidates, unfortunately, didn't flip very left-wing seats. However, I would have to say that the Democrats poured a lot of money into these races to try and defeat Bill Wells and Gunderson. So, you know, there's ups and downs on this. Joel Anderson won decisively with 62% of the vote for his district as it relates to the county commissions. So we saw, you know, some victories and some losses. You know, as you go up and down the state, we were able to claim, you know, some victories in the congressional area, though I have to say that we didn't flip as many congressional seats as I would have hoped. But the states that made that happen, North Carolina flipped about three seats. I think Ohio did, and even New York. So, you know, the latest that I saw at the time of this airing was clearly won the Senate by, you know, a majority of three or four votes, which was critical. Obviously won the White House. And then the House was at 217 before I went on the air, and they still have like 10 seats. But it's the prediction is they'll have at least 222. Not a huge lead, not a huge change, Kelly, in the House situation, but clearly a trifecta in the sense that all three, you know, we have an opportunity now to really see, you know, some powerful impact on what's going on in this country.
Yeah, it is pretty incredible. And if you look at just across the board at every county, you know, just the wins that we had for red is pretty incredible. I didn't know. My husband even said it. He was like, I think Trump's either going to win in a landslide or he's going to lose by a little, but I didn't believe it. I thought it was going to be a little closer than it was. Like you said before, I mean, it is closer than we'd like just because of the craziness, the inflation, the crime, the border crisis. You know, even when you look at the climate change agenda and the money thrown at that, money thrown overseas, the wars, you would think that more of America was going to go ahead and wake up and we were going to turn every state, every county red. But I'm going to take the win. I'm pretty excited. We woke up the next day. My husband went to the – he was actually at work at his fire station. He said it was just a different vibe. They had a different mood. You know, I think that Kevin Sorbo, my good friend, said it well. He said, Jesus is Lord and Trump is president. So, okay. You know, we're pretty excited for these wins. Like you said, I wish it was a little more, but – I think we're getting there. And, you know, when you look, Steve, you just talked a lot about your PAC, Save America Now PAC, and everything that you're doing. There's so many times that you can get discouraged and think, are we making a difference? Are we making an impact? Are we really just coming together for these delicious lunches, or are people listening to the speakers and what they're saying? And I think this proves that people are listening. People are waking up. Even the results flipping 10 counties red in California. You know, we haven't seen these types of results, I don't know, since the 90s. Am I right? Is it, when was the last time we saw these results?
Probably, yeah, the 90s, the Newt Gingrich era, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, just to mention some of the counties that got flipped, Riverside County, which is up in your north of your neighborhood, San mm-hmm. Bernardino, Fresno, Orange County. Which has always been a pretty almost red county. So we've seen we've been passing out. Obviously, you can't do this on the radio, but a 2024 map of blue versus red in California, and a 2020, and it's probably. If you just look at the land mass, about 70% red now. Now, the coastal area and, unfortunately, Imperial and San Diego counties are still blue, but some of them are becoming pink. I do think that, you know, we've got an opportunity. The spread with the Trump vote, he was up 10 percentage points versus 4 years ago. But I also say that in California, you think about California, if we can flip California by 2028, that's 54 electoral votes. That's huge. Mm. You know, there's no state that has more electoral votes by far. I think Texas is 30, and I think New York is even less than 30 now. So you get a lot of bang for your buck by investing in California.
I agree. And as California goes, we know, so goes the United States. But I think also be encouraged that even counties like Los Angeles, Orange County, you know, we talked on that, but the percentage of, you know, just compared to 2020 versus 2024, there's a huge jump. I believe it's 7.4% or something just in Los Angeles County of a percentage jump to red in this election. So if it didn't turn completely red, you can be encouraged that it's going that direction.
Well, and in some of those local elections, such as their district attorney, who has been just horrible in terms of dealing with criminals, they booted him out resoundingly. You know, you can only take so many store break-ins and rapes and murders till you go like, you know, and it was a George Soros-backed DA who, you know, clearly, and he was beat by one of the other district attorneys that said, we're not going to put up with any of this anymore. And, the other thing, the Wall Street Journal, which I read every day, one of their headlines was Trump won a big share of the Latino vote, altering national political landscape. And the Latino vote went about 50% of the men, or maybe more, voted for Trump, which is probably at least twice what it was 4 years ago. Significant improvements in the black vote and certainly in the young people. I went election night to the Grand Hotel, which is kind of the epicenter for the Republican, you know, watching the election results. And it was full of young people wearing MAGA hats, you know, and it was just exciting, to almost more excitement than I can handle at my age. You know, it was encouraging, even though we weren't sweeping every local election. We were certainly, this was before Trump got to the 270. He was in the, 240, 250 range. And the excitement in that room was just breathtaking. I was very impressed, Kelly, with the number of people in their 20s and 30s that were there. And they were obviously there with, you know, in California, you don't see a lot of Trump bumper stickers. I actually put one on my car after I came back from the convention in Milwaukee, put it on the back window. And in less than 24 hours, it was gone. And the only time, I don't even recall taking the car to any public place. Somebody literally came on our property at night and took the bumper sticker off. And you know, you didn't see, whereas other parts of the country having a yard sign, bumper stickers, flags, that was pretty common. But California, you know, California still has some very serious, you know, we have a governor that's going to make a stink anytime he can, including threats that he's not going to close the California border. So he's going to leave the door open, I guess. Now, that'll be a very interesting battle between ICE and you know, the federal jurisdiction versus state jurisdiction.
Well, and on that front, it's interesting when you look at the Latino, the Hispanic vote, and how, you know, it's jumped drastically in the polls for this election towards red, towards Trump. I mean, think about, you know, the majority of these Latinos coming in, they're Catholic, they're, you know, pro-life. They are maybe even coming from socialist or communist countries, and they want the freedoms of America. They see it better than we do. And so they're letting all these people flood in. Now, of course, we know there's a lot more that goes along with that, with the crime and a lot of these military-aged men coming in. We see a lot of bad things happening. But I think they tend to feel this is going to be a win for them, and this election has proven they might be wrong in that. They may be, you know, funding these illegal immigrants to come in, and they might actually be voting red when they get here because they want to keep it. They want to, you know, keep this as a free country and a republic. So it's kind of interesting. I think it might be turning on its heels right in front of their eyes. And but one of the things that I thought that was really encouraging was that we did see one in four Black males were voting for Trump in this election, and that is huge. When you look across the board, when you've looked in the past, that is a huge win and accomplishment. So many people like to point at Trump and say he's a Nazi, he's racist, but I think we've proven them wrong, and all that rhetoric is out the door now, because these results have really proven that the Americans have spoke, and they want him as president. So I don't know what they're going to say now and what they're going to throw in our direction, but this is pretty encouraging across the board.
You know, one of the greatest entertainment I've seen since November 6th or 7th is watching the comedians on in the evening, Jimmy Kimmel and Colbert and all those folks that are in shock and depression, and they've spent their last 4 years just every night trying to run down Donald Trump, and you know, and to see them so shocked, it makes you wonder that, you know, like, they really believed this stuff. It wasn't just that they were, you know, an oracle for it. They actually believed the garbage. And so it's, you know, one of the biggest challenges we have, of course, is the liberal media. Thankfully, there's places like News Nation and Fox that did a pretty good job of sharing what is the truth and providing, you know, some real insight for folks. You know, Fox was, when I went to the Republican thing on Tuesday night, guess what TV channel was on all the TVs? It was Fox. And, you know, so the reality is that the truth is coming crashing in on people, and some of them are having a very difficult time. You know, Kelly, the women that are cutting their hair and doing all kinds of crazy things is an example of I guess an example of how they really drank the Kool-Aid, and we're not, and so, you know, sin has its penalties, and what we're seeing is the penalties of buying into a lot of this stuff. And of course, it was kind of interesting, the polls. As you'd watch the polls, my wife would be very concerned, because one day you'd see this, and another day that, and this and that, back and forth. And, you know, I'm an auditor, and we do sample testing all the time when we audit a set of books. And there's all kinds of sampling theory that we could spend a whole program on. But the reality is that the way the samples are selected, the size and the basis they're selected, has a huge impact on the results. And so most polls, Wall Street Journal had an opinion page on November 9th that said most polls underestimated Trump. There were a few that, you know, basically got it right. But I would say we really didn't see many polls that replicated, you know, what actually happened. One of the other magazines or newspapers I read every day is the Financial Times, which is actually published in London, so it's a very international newspaper. But one of their major headlines was, Wall Street rejoices as Trump brings prospect of higher financial oversight. And I don't know if you've checked your stock portfolio lately, but people have made tens of thousands of dollars. I have two twin grandkids, and I've got them. They have their own portfolios, and not a lot of money, but it's enough to get them excited sometimes. And so my grandson, who's quite a little, he likes to give me stock advice at age 13. But he said, "Grandpa, you need to buy this or that." And so I was taking him to school today, and I said, Raul, have you seen the unrealized gains in your portfolio since the election? And so I shared with him that you know, his has gone up substantially. And so people are already feeling the effect of this.
Right.
And I, you know, one of the great things about Trump is, you know, he works I got to believe he sleeps about 4 hours a night because he is just working, you know, all the time. And, you know, getting his chief of staff named, and who sounds like just a phenomenal selection, getting his, you know, she was working with Jack Kemp when he was running. And not many people even know who Jack Kemp is, but I met Jack Kemp years ago. He ran for president, but he was a football – he was a quarterback for the Buffalo Bills that got involved in the Republican race. But you know, she was working for him back in the day, so that goes back quite a while. But you know, his selection – I thought his selection of Vivek and Elon Musk was very creative.
Well, and I wanted to say something really quick. When you were talking about the polls, you know, and kind of how they got it wrong before election, I was telling my husband, and this is going to tie into kind of the market right now as well, but, you know, I told him, why don't you just look at the Vegas betting? That's going to tell you who's going to win this election. And I think, you know, you put your money where your mouth is. I think people were putting money on Trump in the polls, in the betting, even though the polls were not saying that he was going to win. I kept looking over at the Vegas betting saying, I think he's going to win. I mean, this right here, people are putting their money. People don't put their money on things that they think are losers. But tie that into what you were talking about with, you know, I had a friend call me during the election. It was on November 5th. She called me and said, my Bitcoin is at 74,000. Do I sell or do I hold? It's going down, Kelly. It's going down. I said, well, do you think Trump's going to win or do you think Trump's going to lose? If you think he's going to lose, go ahead and sell, girl. It's at its height. But if you think Trump is going to win, I would hold, hold, hold. And we look at it now, it's at 93,000 last I looked at it today. So, yes, I mean, it has had a huge impact. And that is just, you know, if you know anything about finance and investing, you know, this is all on hope. This is not, these aren't actual numbers. The stock market is going up based on a hope in our economy right now. It's not based on actual numbers that these companies have already produced. So it's interesting, you know, and you need to be careful, of course, because this may settle for a little bit and then go back up when the economy does go up under his leadership. But it shows you the projection of the future and the hope that our economy, that our people have in our economy with Trump as president.
Well, underlying a lot of that is three things. Number one is opening up the energy that the first day Biden got in, you know, he shut down, you know, the oil exploration and pipelines and just totally stupid things to do, just insane things to do so that we ended up ultimately buying oil from Venezuela. What an insane thing to do. But the energy side of things, we use a lot of energy. And so that's one thing. The second thing is his use of tariffs to wisely keep, wisely keep business and manufacturing in the United States and not let the Chinese that subsidize so much of the pricing of products in here to take our market share away. And I'm kind of a Monroe Doctrine kind of guy, but for the most part, there are times that you need to exercise protection over your own manufacturing base. I think finally that people realize that the government needs to be largely reduced in size, and I look at, you know, as a CPA, the all the climate change sustainability proposals that have been pushed through the SEC, and that ultimately end up in the government relative to all the 10K, 10Q filings, and all the disclosure that they won. Thankfully, there was enough litigation in the United States that it kept it from going into law. But I have to tell you, I'm a former Big Four audit partner, and I listen to these broadcasts, webinars, these really smart people I used to work with that drank all the Kool-Aid, and they just couldn't say the word sustainability and climate change enough. Though the last broadcast before the election, Kelly, The last question they were asked is, what do you think Trump's impact going to be on climate change? And the guy said, bleak. And and he has already come out and taken the position. He's going to get rid of the guy that's running the SEC and bring in some sane people. And while there may be a few vestiges of the climate change thing, we're getting out of the Paris Accord and getting out of the nonsense of, you know, trying to measure and manage our life based on carbon. And you know, it just, you know, the underlying issues related to that kind of thinking. But he's going to, you know, Elon Musk took Twitter and got rid of 80% of the people. And he, he basically, I mean, here's a guy that does amazing things with space and with you know, a large number, a lot of technology, because he just thinks clearly without, I'm not quite certain where he got his, he's South African, where his background came from. But, you know, he thinks clearly through things. And so to put him and Vivek in charge between now and July 4th of 2026, which is our 250th anniversary of this country, they have 19 months to actually get rid of a lot of the waste and the bureaucracy in Washington. And I wouldn't be surprised if 50% of the people are terminated. And and they've got to go find jobs in which they're going to be productive and not just living off of tax dollars. Think of the effect that that's going to have on the budget. Think of the effect that's going to have on our taxes. Because it's been just, you know, the United States, still 4% of the population, we produce 30-40% of the GDP. Our innovation is just, you know, really off the charts. And yet it's still off the charts in spite of all the bureaucracy and the deep state. And if we can free that up, you know, we're just going to shock the world even more. And so I think, you know, Kelly, when you go to the store and you've got to buy food for all the, those four boys who are probably pretty good eaters, you know, you're going to get back to seeing some prices in less than 6 months. That makes sense. Yeah. Now, one of the
my prayer.
I'm sure it is. One of the fallacies that happens is once you reach a higher inflated state, you know, our gasoline has doubled in price in California. It's gone up 100%, and the once it's at that level, and our food prices and our other products, even with costs coming down, it's very hard to get the retail market to actually reduce the price, because they're kind of saying, hey, you know, people are used to paying this. We'll just keep it at that level and we'll make more money. So watching that occur and see how – and I think what happens is the free enterprise system has enough competitive forces that, that once you start seeing you know, prices dropping because people can still make a good profit and drop their prices, that that will tailspin into other folks. But nevertheless, it's we're in for some changing times, you know, for sure. Now, one of the topics I did want to talk about is Epoch Times is a very interesting, I guess it's Epoch Times. I've never quite gotten that right. But they had an article in the most recent edition that came out a couple days ago that we ought to talk about. That is abortion on the ballot in 10 states, what voters decided. And this is kind of, it shows that we still have a lot of work to do. But out of the 10 states, seven of them had referendums on their ballot in which they supported more pro-abortion positions. So, and these were states like Arizona, states like, you know, Montana, Missouri, believe it or not, Nebraska.
Hey, Steve, can we talk about Arizona? They are so interesting to me. They have open carry, yet they are so liberal in so many other areas. It's a very, very unique state. But when you say pro-abortion, you know, agendas or different things that are on the ballot, what are you talking? I mean, what are we looking at? Were they you know, further along yes. in there? Because I don't know too much about
a lot of it was reducing restrictions on number of weeks, and expanding from 15 weeks to, you know, a lot more. And the two states that stood up for what was right and rejected this was South Dakota and Nebraska. And Nevada has to revisit the topic. So three out of the 10 states kind of supported a more pro-life position. But Colorado, which at one time, you know, Colorado Springs is the epicenter for, you know, so many Christian ministries, and yet the state is a blue state. Florida, believe it or not, Florida passed a measure. Maryland, that doesn't surprise me. Missouri surprises me. And New York, of course, but you know, Arizona, so we still have a lot of work to do in terms of really getting our population, because effectively the Supreme Court said we're going to push the topic out to the states, and of course we know California, you just you can't have enough abortions, you know, there were seven other states that embraced more pro-choice, less pro-life measures, some of which that surprised you, particularly Florida. And so we still have a lot of work to do in that area, which is a biblical, spiritual, you know, this is not a Republican, Democratic issue. It is a spiritual issue, and it's an issue that that pastors and ministers from their pulpit need to re-educate their, re-educate their congregation to realize, you know, we're not talking about politics. We're talking about the life of a child. And so, you know,
and you have to keep in mind that a lot of times when you debate these people about abortion and you say, you know, I think it's killing a baby. I really do believe, you know, a baby is a baby at inception. And they say, well, we are just talking about first 4 weeks or 6 weeks, like you said, 15 weeks. And really, it's for people who have been raped or incest, and we don't believe it's a baby yet. You know, there's all these arguments, but like you just said, and this is where that progressive movement just keeps progressing, you know, most of these 10 states are looking for less restrictions on abortion. Why? You know, if it's only for rape, incest, or they don't believe it's actually a baby yet, then why would they want there to be less restrictions? They would say, oh, well, but for sure it's a baby after 15 weeks. And so absolutely not. But you see that at least 10 states, and we're going to see it across the board as they continue to put out these initiatives, they want to continue to be able to abort a baby up until birth. So, you know, when you have people that come at you and say, you don't understand if it's rape or incest, well, that's not what they're going after. You know, you can just discount that automatically.
That's a very good point. And, you know, the other thing they failed to do is share with what happens to women who have had abortions. You know, I saw a statistic that something like 20-30% of women in America have abortions. And, and the mental pain and guilt that they feel afterwards, I'm sure it kind of affects people differently depending on their heart, but I've known a couple that have had tremendous emotional guilt feelings. One actually put a pro-life ministry together, but it has a profound effect on you know, when people reflect on that, coupled with just a lot of the health risks of the procedure itself. And so, yeah, there's no way that God is blessing any of that. And, so it's an area that we have to stay focused on, and realize that we still have a lot of work to do there. I had another article that I found interesting in the Financial Times called Five Blunders That Sank the Harris Campaign. Blunders That Sank the Harris Campaign. And let me just kind of read these. The first one was her appearance on The View. Now, I'm not somebody that sits around watching The View other than the clips, but do you remember when she was on The View? And I forgot who asked her, hey, Kamala, what would you do differently from you know, the last 4 years with Biden.
Yeah.
And she had that deer in the headlights look for a few seconds and go, I can't think of anything.
Yeah, yeah. I back everything that Biden did as his vice president. Really? Okay. You know, and she didn't want to speak ill of Biden, but it was obvious that there was no, you know, she hadn't been thinking for herself. And that's where I really, truly do believe that there is a puppet master, that she is just the puppet in this. And, you know, we've been talking a lot of people, even on the left, are talking about her blunders and how she ruined this. But let's see it for what it is. You know, you want a democracy and you took away the vote of your party and put in the vice president over the president, had him resign for running for office. And you did it last minute. And this is somebody who, you know, as the vice president and as a woman, she already was not very liked, you know, even by her own party. She was not liked by women. She was not very liked by the Democratic Party. Steve, I actually thought they did a very good job on her campaign to make her semi-likable by the time people got out to vote. So looking at the numbers, obviously just relying on the Democratic Party in general, she was going to get quite a few votes. But, you know, she had a better showing than I anticipated when they originally brought her in as a candidate for the Democratic Party.
You know, I have to agree with you. When they, you know, I went to the Republican convention, which was so incredibly well managed, and then watching in August the Democratic convention, and I kind of cringed because they were able to put her on with all the joy and the big smiles and all this stuff that and all the clapping. That I would sit there and go, are Americans going to be smart enough? Are they going to be smart enough not to get sucked into the momentum that she was generating? You know, the second reason is she avoided tough questions. And Bret Baier had her on Fox for, I don't know, 22 minutes. And they were doing everything they could to he did a pretty good interview. But she, of course, was doing her typical word salad responses and blundering through that. The third thing people mentioned
is a skill. She has a skill in those word salads.
Her running mate choice was horrendous. I mean, that guy, and I know I have a friend that moved from Minnesota and was under his government and just couldn't say anything nice about the guy. I mean, he, they had a half a dozen post-birth abortions that he allowed for in Minnesota, but a lot of his economic stuff. And then he just kind of came across as a buffoon, in my opinion. And then you looked into his military record and coaching and all that stuff. He just, the governor of Pennsylvania would have been a much smarter choice. And then the foreign policy troubles that, you could, when you look at the look out over the horizon with the situation in Ukraine and China and North Korea, Israel, you know, it was obvious that the Harris-Biden administration had no skills whatsoever to provide any type of stability in the world. And then the final thing that really crushed was Biden's use of the word garbage and insulting, much like Hillary and her insult to Americans. Just a stupid move. Now, maybe I'm sure the friction between the Biden camp and Harris camp and Pelosi and all that was just breathtaking in terms of all the and it just keeps coming out. But the reality is that and the thing you got to watch and you think about how Trump is able to take something like that and turn it into, humor and support. You know, here he gets in the garbage truck and here he is when Kamala couldn't prove she worked at McDonald's. He's out, passing French fries out. I mean, it's just he is quite a showman in his ability to. And even in all the court cases, he turned those all into press conferences. He was able to get more attention, you know, really for that, and of course generated rightly
so. Common people, you know, he was reached out to the common people, and it's interesting, you know, we saw it with Hillary, and then we saw it now with Biden, just, you know, going after the MAGA. I mean, make America great again, right? They actually went after the MAGA movement, which of course it was tied to Trump. But think about what you're saying, you know, that you're anti people who want to make America great again. It was really interesting. But I'm going to throw this out there, and I'm going to make you a little uncomfortable maybe, but as a woman, I can say it. I just don't think the world is ready yet for a woman president. I mean, they tried in 2016. They've tried again in 2024. We can argue all day that they just weren't great candidates. But I don't know that we're ready for a woman president. As progressive as the United States has become, as much as, you know, people across the world think that Western civilization is going, you know, where in a handbasket, because we allow women to, you know, show their shoulders and their ankles. But I don't know that. I think it plays a part. I do. I think a lot of American men are not ready to have a woman. I mean, you know, just stature in general, and, you know, standing up and being the leader of our military and going against, you know, foreign government. And I just, what are your thoughts, Steve? I want to hear from you. What do you think about, well, you know, when is the U.S. going to be ready for a woman president?
I think of Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah.
That there are very smart, bright, conservative women who are well-heeled, well-spoken, and, you know, Margaret Thatcher with Reagan, you know, that was 40 years ago, had a tremendous impact on England and the UK because she understood economics. She understood what the labor market was doing to their economy. And so the Conservative Party, until just recently, the vestiges of her leadership really stayed around for a long time. So, you know, my view of it is you've got to kind of set aside the gender and look at the person and realize that, you know, it and their ability to articulate. You know, Reagan was a phenomenal communicator. And he could take – he had great humor, great stories. People loved listening to him. And, you know, he had a bigger landslide than Trump, by the way. He got all but one state. But nevertheless, against Mondale. But, you know, I think when you look at the Pelosis, the Kamalas, the Hillarys, none of those are decent candidates. But that doesn't mean there isn't a, look at the chief of staff. The chief of staff looks like a very, very smart, solid woman who, quite frankly, is going to carry a lot of power in terms of protecting the president and whatnot. So, you know, I think it really depends on finding the right person. England did find the right person in that case. But
I think you're right. I think it's somebody that, whether it's male or female, you want to see that they have logical thinking, they have good policies, that they're going to hold the line, that they're going to be solid. And we didn't see that in those two women. So I don't know. We'll see what the future holds. But I do think, you know, it's new. It would be the first woman president. So I think they would have to be pretty on point. And like you said, they would have. I do personally think the gender would play a role of overcoming that little tidbit extra, you know, than maybe a man who's running. So,
but you have to understand, Kelly, you live in a house full of men. I grew up in a house full of women, including a female dog. And I learned what surrender was a long time ago. And I do thankfully have a grandson, and we have some great communications, but women have tremendous power. You know, they
absolutely
they can, you know, definitely persuade and get their way. I don't know how you kind of you're 5-on-1 is the ratio there, but I'm sure
6-on-2. We just got a female dog, so we have one male dog, and one female dog. So
okay.
So what do you
when you want to get your way, what do you do?
Yeah, I mean, well, we talk about it all the time. The boys come to me and I say, well, Dad is the head of the household, so go ask him. And they say, Mom, let's be honest. We all know that you make all the decisions. Dad says it, but you told him in the bedroom beforehand to come out and tell us that. So they're aware that, you know, Mom's the neck, Dad's the head of the household. And, you know, I am a conservative Republican, but Christian woman, and I kind of have those old school values. I do like a pastor to be a man. I like my president to be a man. And I know I'm going to get flack for that. But I just feel that if I want my boys and my men, my husband, to look up to a leadership, you know, I do think that it needs to be a man that they can look up to. So
yeah, well,
I want them to lead my house.
And I agree with that. And when you look at the scriptures and the relationship, a husband and wife, God clearly has specific roles for each of them, you get in trouble when people mix them up. So
yeah, it doesn't make you weak. It doesn't make you weak if you're a woman who likes a strong man who's the head of the household. I'll tell you that. It actually makes you stronger, in my opinion. So, and in God's opinion. So.
Well, we've been listening today to the post-election wrap-up from Biblical Citizenship Alive. Kelly and I. We're pretty aligned on things, thankfully. But we really wanted to spend this time without a guest necessarily to really kind of review what's been going on and to be thankful for God's grace on this country, the challenges we still have ahead of us. But certainly we need to pray for our leadership. We need to pray for Trump's physical safety for sure and for Vance. So anyhow, this is a special time, and it's been a great couple of weeks since the election results, and we're just thankful for that. So stay tuned for another upcoming radio show here in the future.
That concludes another powerful episode of Biblical Citizenship Alive, brought to you by Save America Now PAC. We thank you for joining us today as we tackled the crucial issues facing our beloved nation. Remember, we stand united for a pro-American, pro-family future deeply rooted in our foundational truths. The insightful discussions and passionate advocacy you've heard here today are just the beginning of our journey to reclaim our cultural integrity. Stay informed, stay engaged, and join us next week as we continue to shape a better tomorrow. Together, we can make a difference. Until next time, let's keep standing strong for what matters most.